Coming soon to Emperors of Rome, we'll be doing some By Request episodes. You see, when we do these episodes, we're looking just at the emperors, but there's lots of other interesting characters, significant events, public buildings, or Roman ways of life that we have to gloss over. So if there's anything in particular that you'd like to know more detail about during the Roman Empire, say during the Julio-Claudian dynasties, drop us a line on Facebook or on Twitter, and we'll do some By Request episodes not too long after Nero. But now, here's the podcast. Ave and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast series about the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me as always is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in Ancient Mediterranean Studies at La Trobe University. This is episode XIV, The Madness of Caligula. While in his early days of rule, Caligula may have shown promise as an emperor, that didn't exactly last for long. And the deeds that he is best known for should not be spoken of in modest podcasts. Of course, this is anything but a modest podcast. But before we delve into his deviances, Dr. Rhiannon Evans tells us where we get our knowledge about Caligula.
Well, we've got two main sources. We've got Suetonius's life, which is, you know, gives us a lot of detail. And we've got a Greek source from 100 years later, Dio Cassius. What we don't have, and we really would like, is the Tacitus bit on Caligula. So Tacitus's annals should cover from the death of Augustus right up to 68 CE when Nero dies.
So he wrote about it, but we're missing a bit.
We've got some bits about him being on Capri in Tacitus, but Tacitus would be a really great source to have. What we've got instead really as our main source is Suetonius, which I love to read. And, you know, anyone who's enjoying this should go and read Suetonius because it's just so sensational.
But they're well after the fact, aren't they?
They are, but then so is Tacitus.
Yeah.
But Suetonius it's a biography, so it's not dealing with the larger history. And also, people have sort of reassessed Suetonius more recently, but he's largely in the past been regarded as kind of akin to reading the tabloid press.
Right.
In that he likes to stress the sensational.
Okay.
Which makes him a great read, but may not make him fully reliable.
Well, look, I'm sure that Tacitus's work is out there somewhere. If anyone sees it, it belongs in a museum. So what does Suetonius tell us about the rule of Caligula then? Let's get into some of the... Look, let's treat the tabloids like they can be credible.
Well, as I say, the last two-thirds of the biography is a big list of his crimes and misdemeanors, and they're fairly extreme. So we've already got the brothel being set up on the Palatine Hill. We've also got other sexual crimes related much more directly to Caligula himself, perhaps the most serious one, that he committed incest with his three sisters, and that he was particularly close to one of his sisters, Drusilla, and that he basically saw himself and her as gods, as living gods on earth. Now, she died before him and he was just utterly bereft and talked about her as a goddess. He had her deified. This did not last, actually. Interestingly, you can undeify people
right, if
they're unpopular. So he's doing a couple of things wrong there. Incest is a taboo in antiquity as it is now, but also talking about himself as a god while he's still alive is a taboo for the Romans. So, and he's supposed to have done things that you might not think are that bad, but they were very bad for the Romans, like getting all these statues, actually stealing them from Greece. So that is bad. The most beautiful statues of the gods that he could find, having their heads taken off and a model of his own head put on there. So he's giving himself a stature that he shouldn't have, even as emperor. And he's also got these kind of crimes of personal intimacy, I guess we could call them, this deviance that's not acceptable at all for the Romans.
But it didn't just stop with his sisters, though. Anyone was fair game for Caligula, weren't they?
He's married four times, which is, it sounds a lot to us, and it's not an awful lot for the Romans because divorce and remarriage is common. But if you think about the fact that Caligula dies when he's 28, that's quite a lot of marriages.
Yeah.
And he does steal wives from senators. One of his wives he stole from a senator basically the night before she's due to get married to this senator. And then he has her executed a while after for allegedly going to see the man she was supposed to marry. So he sort of seems to tire of women very quickly. But the big problem for the senators, of course, is that treating them like dirt by not recognizing their status. So it's not so much the fact that Caligula sleeps with lots of women, they wouldn't really care about that too much, it's the fact that he's sleeping with women who are elite women, they've got status, and they should only be having sex within their marriages. He's not appreciating the kind of codes of behavior that you should have as an elite Roman.
But he shows a lot of disregard for that in a fair few of the things that he does, not just deifying himself while he was still alive and showing disregard that way. But we talked before about how he opened a brothel. And also, you explained the situation with the horse. What did he do with his horse?
Well, his horse is called Incitatus.
I like that we know his name. What did that mean?
It means very speedy.
Oh, that's a good name for a horse.
You know, you can incite them on.
That horse has his own Wikipedia page, by the way.
Well, he should. Caligula supposedly gave him a marble stable with all the most luxurious furnishings that you could think of for the horse, and said the horse shouldn't be disturbed at certain points, and sort of treated him with a lot more regard than he treated the Roman people, which I think is kind of the point that the sources are making there. He treats this horse like it's a person who should be given elite status, but he treats the senators like they're nobodies. Mm. It's the upside downness of a lot of Caligula's actions that is being stressed by Suetonius and others. And of course, the big story about his horse, which tends to have become a thing that people say, is that Caligula made his horse a consul. Now, this is not actually what Suetonius says. He says there was a rumor that Caligula was going to make his horse a consul.
Right.
And this may be one of those jokes. You know, he loves his horse so much, he might make him a consul.
Yeah.
Because he's not treating the senators, who should be consuls, with any respect. It also, though, has been treated by one of Caligula's most recent biographers, a German scholar called Winterling, as part of a kind of bigger strategy on Caligula's part to expose the way that he's being treated, the sycophancy of the senators, and to expose the whole system. For example, he gets offered honors like, we will treat you as a god, we will worship you in that way. The kind of unwritten agreement is that he will be offered these things, but say no.
Right.
And Caligula, according to some scholars, says, well, no, I'm not going to say no. If you're going to offer me that stuff, I'll take it because I'm emperor and I can take it. We don't know whether this is true. It's not what Suetonius says. But the whole horse being a consul idea would fit in quite nicely with that, I think, because it's as if Caligula's saying, well, you're just offering me whatever I like. You know, you will do anything. You're all sycophants. I may as well make my horse a consul. He'll give me better advice than you lot.
How is his regard for the Romans then? I'm assuming at this point he didn't have their best interests really at the forefront of his mind.
Well, he's spending lots and lots of money, which is not a great thing to do, of course, as an emperor. It's good if you spend it on the masses and you can control the economy at the same time, as Augustus had done. But he's spending a lot of it on himself, lavish palaces, lavish boats, a bridge that he has built from the imperial palace to the Capitoline Hill, which is symbolic in itself because, A, it's a bridge that goes over the Temple of Augustus. So that's like saying, I'm better than Augustus. You know, I'm building symbolically something above the temple of the deified Augustus. But also it means he can go from his house to the main temple of Jupiter on the Capitoline Hill. So that's making that link, which is already kind of there if he was thinking of himself as a god. It's making it more explicit. And it's spending money that doesn't really need to be spent. This is not making Rome more glamorous in the way that Augustus did as a city to be proud of. It's doing something for himself. So, for example, he had some ships fitted out in very luxurious fashion. They're called the Nemi ships, and in fact, fragments of them have been recently excavated this century by Mussolini. And what Suetonius describes them as, he calls them Liburnian galleys, which should be warships and aren't actually that big. So I think it must be something a little bit bigger, because apparently he had swimming pools and colonnades on it and dining rooms. You know, it was all done out in the most lavish way possible. Not only expensive and extravagant, but also a kind of floating palace because it's got these separate areas that, you know, you can actually go bathing on the ship. I think of these ships as a kind of ancient cruise ship.
Yeah. So for the everyday Roman, they don't see this sort of opulence. What sort of impression were they left of their ruler? Is he somebody that they would see as approachable or admirable?
Well, there's no doubt that there was a lot of kind of residual love for him just because he was Germanicus's son.
And he threw money out to them.
He did throw money at them, but he does become increasingly known for his cruelty and also for his kind of playing with people. So there are reports that he put on gladiatorial games, but he found the most kind of bedraggled, pathetic gladiators. They want to see, you know, burly gladiators who'll put up a good fight, and these ones are already on the way out. So that's like an insult to the people. It's worse than what Tiberius did, which was nothing. So that may have happened as time went on. Or indeed, as I say, a double insult. There's the expectation that you're going to get something, but it's actually something that's not very good. And it's an example of the way that Caligula sort of turns everything on its head. He always does the wrong thing. He does not just the wrong thing, but it almost seems deliberate. There's a story that he ran out of meat for the wild animals, because the Romans like to see wild animals killed in the arena. So he fed them prisoners. So that's the opposite of what should happen. He does lots of things that could be normal, but he always manages to do them in an abnormal way that makes him look deviant or makes him look cruel or makes him look tyrannical.
It seems pretty clear then that he wouldn't care about what people thought about him at all.
He doesn't seem to have been worried about his PR. He really didn't learn the lessons that Augustus had put forward. This, as we'll see, is the case with so many of the emperors that come afterwards. And really, you could argue that the emperors who are successful are the ones that look at Augustus and say, that's what we're going to do. We're going to make sure the people are happy, the army is happy, we're going to not disrespect the Senate too much, but they have to know their place. Caligula doesn't keep any of them happy. He's supposed to have said that he didn't care at all, that he wanted the Roman public to be afraid of him. And in fact, the very pithy quote attributed to him by Suetonius is, "Let them hate me as long as they fear me."
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. And you've been listening to Emperors of Rome. This podcast can be found on iTunes and SoundCloud, where you can subscribe, leave a review, and please tell your friends about it. You can follow us both on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. Emperors of Rome also has a Facebook page where you can come and join in the conversation. Join us for the next episode of Emperors of Rome, where we look at the death of Caligula and the first confirmed assassination of a Roman emperor. Until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.